Football Weekly.
Football Weekly Extra with a roundup that's more in-depth than a man taking a wrong turn in Venice. In today's show, drama at Sunderland. Roy Keane goes walkies, leaving the Black Cats. There's midweek League Cup action. A big weekend coming up around Europe. Valencia-Barca, Bayern Munich-Hoffenheim, and Sid versus our legal department as he again attempts to get his Malaga story past the suits. There's Post, Raphael, Amy, and everything you needed to know about the weekend in the Premier League. Hello, everybody. Specifically, in this case, Amy Lawrence, how are you doing?
Very well, thank you.
Excellent. Thanks for joining us again. You were a big hit last time. Everyone loved
oh,
you.
Oh, shucks.
Raphael.
Hello.
You rogue, you. You're in a kind of romper suit affair this time, Raphael. Yes. Honigstein. Right. Aye. Often you got, you know, the Bottega.
My lederhosen are in dry cleaning.
Are they? I wonder why. There's a story in that, I imagine. Barry.
Hello.
Hi there. You're looking chic, casual, relaxed.
I'm not relaxed. I'm very angry.
You're very angry, Barry.
Yeah.
Over to you, Barry.
Well, at the time of recording,
yes.
All the signs are that Roy Keane has left Sunderland.
Left.
Whether he was fired or resigned, we don't know yet.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not happy about it at all.
Isn't that good news?
No. Why is it good news?
Well, they're 18th. They're about to go down. You need a bit of change of management to freshen things up.
I wouldn't agree in the slightest. They're about
they're not 18.
6 points off a UEFA place. They're doing okay. And I'm just curious to know, as I say, it may not even be true, but all the signs are that he has left the club.
Right, okay.
If he's been sacked, I think it's an absolute disgrace.
Right. It is.
But why? Why is it disgrace? He's obviously not...
What has he done wrong?
The results have been very poor.
The results have... Sunderland have had no luck this season. They've had no penalties. They've had a lot of decisions go against.
Come on.
I worked out this morning. I can't remember the exact games, but about 7 points they've been robbed of.
Have you got a dossier?
Various, I have a dossier.
Excellent.
About 7 points they should have got that they didn't as a result of dodgy refereeing decisions. I'm not saying other teams don't have refereeing decisions.
Some of their own, they've contributed massively to their current predicament. Now, it is still relatively early in the season and the league is still tight enough for the situation to be rescuable without too much difficulty. But I think the thing is, if he himself isn't happy there, if he himself feels that he cannot go on or cannot turn things around, and that does seem to have been the case in the build-up to this, then maybe it is right that he walks.
Well, I think he's a bit too introspective and he should probably stop beating himself up all the time. Sunderland have got some good results this season. They beat Newcastle and they've, as you say, the situation they're in is far from, you know, calamitous. They could easily get up the table with a few good, if they could string a few good results together. Everyone uses this 70 million quid that Keane has apparently squandered as a stick to with which to beat him. You know, all managers make bad transfers. All Keane's transfers haven't been bad. He's made some very good ones. You know, he's Cisse, Tanyo, Malbrank, Craig Gordon, Anton Ferdinand has been doing okay. Pascal Chimbonda has been doing okay. The players that helped him get out of the championship in the first place, you know, all did okay, but some of them didn't prove good enough for the Premier League. But, you know, there's no shame in that. They did a job. Kenwyn Jones is there. He's okay. So, you know, it's a fallacy to suggest that Keane has squandered 70 million quid. But I've noticed in Ireland, particularly, a lot of people who just don't like Keane because of they perceive that he walked out of the World Cup, in which case he didn't. He was asked to leave or ordered to leave. So that's another fallacy. So a lot of Irish people just don't like him. Yesterday we had Eamon Dunphy sticking his head above the parapet. He used to be a friend of Keane's. Now he's saying that Keane doesn't know what he's doing. He's babbling. And for Keane to accuse anyone of, or for Dunphy to accuse anyone of not knowing what they're doing or babbling or talking shite is just laughable.
But he also accused him of believing in his own mythology. Maybe you do the same. Maybe you want to believe that Roy Keane is a brilliant manager, but the hardcore evidence suggests that perhaps he isn't.
The hardcore evidence is that he took a team from the bottom of the championship and got them promoted as champions in his first season as a manager. He then kept them up and now they're in a better position this year than they were this time last year. I would say that's quite a good job.
It's a very interesting statistic. So they're better off at this point of this campaign than they were at this point of last campaign.
Yes, they've more points, 3 more points, I think.
But you're speculating here that he's been sacked, is what you were saying earlier. I mean, there is quite a strong possibility, in fact, that he chose to leave. And I think you have to look at it another way, which is, if Roy Keane chose to leave Sunderland, and given the fact that he wasn't so keen on signing a new contract anyway for most of the season, and that's been a problem as well. I mean, you can never have stability when you've got your leader at the club who's not really committing himself beyond the next few months. You know, I think Roy Keane perhaps is looking at has looked around him and thought, I'm not sure I like where this is going. We don't really know what the mood is like inside the camp, perhaps in the same way when Juan de Ramos left Tottenham earlier. The signs were there, but it was only once he left that it was so obvious that everybody was having a terrible time and the atmosphere was dreadful. Perhaps the atmosphere is not so good. Keane has recognised that. Keane has seen that he's not going to get what he's hoped out of some of the players at his disposal and doesn't want to sully his reputation by him being involved with a relegation so soon into his managerial career.
Well, walking out would hardly help enhance his reputation, particularly as he already has an unjustified reputation as someone.
Why do you say unjustified when by most people's recognition at the time, whether they were Irish or not, he appeared to leave of his own volition. Nobody actually put him on that plane.
He was ordered to leave by McCarthy. I know for a fact because Niall Quinn told me that for a fact. McCarthy ordered him out of the camp. He could have come back and chose not to, but he did not walk out on it. He was ordered out for gross insubordination, and probably correctly ordered out, because he ripped McCarthy a new one in a team meeting, and you can't really do that and expect to get away with it, even if you're Roy Keane.
Well, next up for Sunderland, and whoever takes over there, is a trip to Old Trafford, excitingly enough.
Yeah.
For a Sunderland team in freefall, I suppose, in a sense, it's not a bad way to start because there's absolutely zero expectations. Man United, meanwhile, taking on another former Man United midfielder midweek, Paul Ince, who's currently in crisis and near the top of the next manager to leave his club stakes with the bookies, Paul Ince, and heading them...
He's only marginally less good shape than Sunderland.
Well, indeed.
Who are in great shape.
Well, I mean, there's a picture on the front of today's right. sports section in The Guardian of Ince walking off the field at Old Trafford last night. He looks distraught. He's almost in tears. And I think this the treatment being meted out to these young, well, British, Keane isn't British, obviously, British or domestic, homebred managers, it's so unfair.
Treatment from whom?
From supporters, from the media.
But isn't this, I mean, this
if,
is
if
a...
If you lose three matches in a row, your job is under threat. They're not being given any bloody time.
But everybody is in the same boat. And, I mean, I thought it was pretty alarming when you see Liverpool drawing against West Ham the other day, getting booed off the pitch. I mean, they're top of the league. I mean, OK, it was a disappointing result, but people have completely lost all sense of perspective now on football. And
but Liverpool fans are the best fans in the world by their own account. So, if they decide to boo, then obviously that's a really fair thing to do.
But it's part of the same topic where, you have got a situation where it's affecting everybody and even players, young players who come in, might have one bad game. And I saw in this one of the tabloids talking about Arsenal's youngsters in the Carling Cup, and there they go analysing hit or miss, and they tick a great big miss against a poor kid of 19 who's played 45 minutes of his debut. I mean, you're writing off people here who have hardly had any time at all in the
that
game.
That was The Guardian, actually, Amy. That was a big funny on The Guardian yesterday about where are they all going to go to now? Will we ever see them?
I agree with you wholeheartedly, because the players take these things really seriously. I mean, every player, the first thing they go to in the paper is their mark out of 10. Right. Now, if they only knew what a cavalier manner those marks were awarded by, it's like, oh God, we forgot to do the marks out of 10, 6, 5, 7, 7, 6, 5. I probably shouldn't be giving away this trade secret. But, they shouldn't put so much heed in them. Fans booing young players saying, fans are entitled to boo because they pay their money. But how is a player supposed to improve if he's afraid of getting the ball? How is he supposed to express himself if he doesn't want the ball?
Now, well, there you go. No arguments there. I'm going to touch briefly on the Carling Cup. We mentioned Man United's victory over Blackburn. I'm going to ask, given that Carlos Tevez apparently hasn't forgotten how to play football in his time in a cupboard in Old Trafford over recent weeks, what are the chances of him sticking around any longer than January? Is he going to push off in January? Because United can't afford, can they, to pay the 30 million or whatever it takes to keep him?
No, they can't afford it, whether they want to. Right. Seems to be in doubt.
Right, okay. And presumably he doesn't want to stick around in these conditions, does he?
Well, I think he's been quite open with courting Madrid last season.
They've just signed to Huntelaar, because I don't know if that would in any way.
Saying, oh, it would be a dream move, etc. I don't think that anyone's going to come in for him in January. I don't even know how the legality or the logistics of that will work, because it's officially still a loan deal. So
right.
I'm not sure it can go and change or whatever.
It's sufficiently complicated that a Man United director is actually representing West Ham in their court case,
yes.
Presumably in order to make sure there are no dangerous precedents against United.
I don't think he's going anywhere, and I think they need him. I don't think they are that strong up front that they can just send one of their best players on and don't think about it.
I think any player agitating for a move, though, is going to find themselves suddenly waking up with a great big smell of coffee and realising how football is changing. Mm-hmm. And it's all very well players thinking, yeah, I'm not happy here, or I want more money there, or whatever. Those days are not going to be around for very much longer. I think players are going to have to accept and be a little bit more humble about the situation that they're in and get on with it.
But would you not think a player of his quality, those days won't end for quite some time?
No, but who's got 30 million spare to pay for him? If Man United don't, look around the rest of the world.
Congratulations in the meantime to Derby, who are through to the semi-finals of the Carling Cup, having beaten Stoke. And Burnley, who continue their magical... Nice to see that particular fairy tale hasn't ended. Amy, you've touched on this already. Their 2-0 victory over Arsenal. Any particular... You saw the game, I imagine, did you?
Yeah, I watched it on TV. And
was Nick not wearing his pink boots?
But they obviously lost their magic sparkle. I think Burnley played well, and it was one of those situations where, for a young, inexperienced team, when it goes for you, then fantastic. And if it doesn't, as it didn't on this occasion, they just had a bit of a flat day. And they'll all learn a few lessons, and some of them, as newspapers have pointed out, won't be around to have another go, but others will learn from it, and will probably emerge better players for having to go to a difficult game and getting a bit of a lesson, really.
Indeed so.
But Burnley beat Arsenal, fair play to him. Owen Coyle is another young British manager who's doing a good job.
The new Shankly, apparently.
Yeah, well, he is until he gets them promoted and they lose 5 or 6 games and then he gets sacked. You know, it's how are they supposed to get to the next level?
Indeed so, Barry. Anyway, listen, I'm just going to finish off this exciting part one with a quick mention on Liverpool, because you talked about the fact that they got booed off, the 0-0 with a good result for West Ham. All sorts of things we could talk about here. Robbie Keane subbed off, and what on earth Rafa's trying to do to his confidence. But the fact that apparently Gillette this week has taken out a loan to give him some money to spend on his ice hockey team, using Liverpool as collateral and taking it out with a very strange agency indeed. We could also talk about the Michael Shields business, which if you're not in England, even if you are in England, you may not know too much about. But there do seem to be two. Basically, they had an organised demonstration in support of Michael Shields, a Liverpool fan who is currently serving 10 years, is it, for attempted murder, according to the court verdict, bashing a Bulgarian waiter on the head with a piece of concrete. And the players are wearing Free Michael T-shirts, and the crowd holding up a mosaic of Free Michael.
That's because his case is up for judicial review this week. It starts today, today being Thursday.
So would that judicial review have been taking place even... That would have been taking place even without this public display of support from Liverpool?
Yes, it would.
Okay.
So he's serving his time in an English prison. He was transferred across from... convicted by a Bulgarian court. Serving his time in an English prison now. For 10 years is his sentence. There seems to be... a lot of grounds to suggest that he didn't do it. Some Liverpool fans state emphatically that he did not do it. Other people think his conviction is dodgy. Nobody seems to know for absolute definite whether he did it or not.
Well, there are a lot of people who point to a confession from another Liverpool fan, a confession
who subsequently retracted the confession.
Yeah.
I mean, there was Lawrence Donegan wrote an interesting blog or article, which is in today's paper, went up on her blog yesterday, and there was a huge response to it. Some of it was really childish and juvenile. Some of it was very interesting and informed and clever. There was, you know, the usual amount of righteous indignation and sarcasm and pomposity that greets a lot of the blogs on our sport blog. But more often than not with Liverpool fans, it's kind of, the argument turned into an argument about whether Liverpool fans are whingers or not, whereas that's not really the issue here. The FA didn't punish them
right.
for this ostentatious show of support for one of their supporters, whereas they did punish David Norris for supporting a convicted criminal, and they did punish Tim Cahill for...
Right.
So it seems to be that the FA have one law for Liverpool and another for every other team.
Yeah. On one hand, you might say it's nice to see that Liverpool, whatever the rules are doing their bit. On the other hand, it's curious how the FA didn't punish them. Mind you, according to the FA, cracking a skull is not a serious offence if we take the recent example of Captain Morgan.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, the point that others have made. Well, it is a thorny issue. Hey, but bizarre to see Liverpool suddenly embarking on that, although they do have...
The thing about this case is that I find uncomfortable is whoever cracked this waiter's skull was a Liverpool fan.
Hmm.
So I think it's a bit tasteless that they're seen to be supporting this guy.
That doesn't alter the fact that there may be... If there is a supporter there who's been wrongly convicted and is in prison for 10 years, I think he would, you know, even though...
Yeah, but there's a very good chance that the supporter who did... he didn't do it. There's a very good chance that the supporter who did was in the ground taking part in this demonstration. I'm not comfortable with that.
Right. Well, I wouldn't be comfortable equally sitting in a cell if I was an innocent man. So I do find it difficult to roundly say they were wrong to do it. That's probably enough for part one. Hey, there may not be too much money flying around in the Premier League these days, but apparently there's lots changing hands in Spain, or at least that's the allegation that Sid Lowe will be discussing right after this.
Football Weekly from Guardian.co.uk.
Sid, how are you doing?
I'm all right, thank you. How are you?
Very, very well. Madrid jury, first off, says, can you please get Sid to comment next time on the match-fixing story that has erupted this week in Spain? Fair dues to you, Sid. You tried on Monday and your bit got snipped.
Some lawyers with a big machete
the lawyers were watching, yeah.
waded into the pod and set about their business.
Now, Sid's bit got snipped.
It did indeed. Now, I believe, Sid, that you've been briefed about what you can and cannot tell us about this story. So, treading carefully, fire away.
I've been briefed by my lawyers not to say anything at all. Yeah, what happened essentially was that a conversation was published in El Mundo newspaper here in Spain. At the same time as the conversation was published, it was also put on their website, so you can actually hear the conversation. The conversation is between Iñaki Badiola, who's currently the Real Sociedad coach, and a guy called Jesuli, who's currently an out-of-work footballer, but who last season was playing for Tenerife. In the conversation, the two are talking about a game last season between Tenerife and Malaga on the final day of the season. Now, to try and make this as clear as possible, on the final day of the season, Malaga and Real Sociedad both had a chance of going up. Malaga had to win, or at least match the result of Real Sociedad to go up. Malaga won 2-1 against Tenerife. Tenerife's goal came in the 93rd minute, so it was irrelevant. So effectively, it was a 2-0 victory. One of the goals was an own goal. Now, during this conversation, Jesuli, who played for Tenerife at the time, is talking to Real Sociedad president, and he admits at one stage that he received some money because of the result of that game. He says that he didn't play because he was out injured. I mean, had a broken nose, I believe, perhaps because of because of something in the previous game, and I'm not sure why he was out. But anyway, he had a broken nose, so he wasn't playing. He said, I received money, around about €6,000, and if I received the money, which was given to me in Seville, I can only assume the rest of my teammates did too. Then he says the killer line, and the killer line was in Spanish, se vendieron, they sold themselves, or they were bought. And this has, of course, brought up the whole possibility that Malaga bought that game, according to the allegations of Hesley. Now, one of the reasons why this is so significant is the week before, there was a big hoo-ha because a recording came out of Lorenzo Sanz, who is the father of the Malaga president, Fernando Sanz, trying to buy a game against Sevilla Atletico. The evidence for that was a bit rough. The recording wasn't great. It wasn't entirely convincing. And also, Lorenzo Sanz has no official post at Malaga, so that was thrown out. But then 6 months later, this other conversation comes out of the possibility, or the allegations at least, of having bought another game. Now, as you can imagine, this is correct. The typical response, the response you'd expect, which is that Malaga have come out and said that this is complete nonsense. Lorenzo Sanz has come out and said that he's going to take legal action if Jesuli doesn't retract his statement. That's not actually a statement as such, because it was a secretly recorded conversation. Jesuli has done that, although he's done that in very, very ambiguous language. The language doesn't actually say categorically, we did not sell the game. What it says is, it's ridiculous to assume that a player, and particularly a player who wasn't at a game, could have sold a game. And so the language is very ambiguous. On top of that, Badiola, the Real Sociedad president, has accused Lorenzo Sanz the father, as I say, of the Malaga president, Fernando Sanz, and, of course, the former Real Madrid president, of being a criminal and a crook. Now, of course, that's going to probably go to court at some stage. At the same time, Tenerife's entire squad have come out collectively and said that they will not allow their good name to be dragged through the mud like this, that this is an issue of which, for which, about which they have nothing to do. It's nothing to do with us, they've said. Again, though, the language is interesting because it's ever so slightly ambiguous. Now, of course, this may well be because the lawyers have been onto them as much as they've been onto us. So we're not really clear where this is going. The Commission for Sporting Discipline in Spain has actually passed this on to the public prosecutor rather than deal with it themselves, because they consider that this could well be a criminal case, because of course, this wouldn't just be, you know, buying a football match. This would be fraud if indeed it was proven to be correct.
Sid, is there any suggestion that this is, dare I use the expression, the tip of the iceberg, that this is not what you might call an isolated case?
Well, it depends how far you want to go with the word suggestion. Now, again, treading fairly carefully, another story has been published today, and a story which doesn't ring quite so true and doesn't seem quite right, some of the details, but it involves the possibility, or at least the allegation, of a game between Levante and Athletic Bilbao having been bought. Now, obviously, again, there's lots and lots of question marks, as there are in the first story with this one, which is, for example, why has it come out now? On this occasion, the recorded conversation is between two people from the same club, the Levante president and a Levante captain, Iñaki Descarga, talking about a game to Athletic Bilbao. So it's not like there's two halves of it in the conversation. It feels a little bit less likely.
What was now, the source on that, Sid?
The source on that is a conversation that's been brought out today by a television station called Popular TV, which is owned by the same group as Cadena Cope.
So
which
that's
is the
who
one
people need to sue, not us, yeah? It's
exactly.
Popular TV, okay, good.
Well, and that's owned by Cadena Cope, which is the TV station in Spain that's owned by the Spanish bishopric, basically, by the collective of the Spanish bishops. Now I'm not going to make any smart ass remarks here. So, but that obviously suggests there could be more to it. But as I say, that story doesn't quite fit properly. The other thing I think that is probably worth mentioning here, and again treading carefully, for a long time it has been assumed in Spain, and everybody's assumed it, nobody's quite admitted it publicly, but there's been an assumption in Spain that for a long time there have been third-party payments in Spanish games towards the end of the season. The difference being that third-party payments in Spain, the famous maletines, or mini suitcases, briefcases, I suppose is the best word for them, have been normally designed. So, say on the last game of the season, you desperately need to win, and you're playing, let's say, for argument's sake, Malaga, and you know, not that it is Malaga, but Malaga have got nothing to play for, and you need to win, and Malaga have got nothing to play for against the team that you're up against. You would pay Malaga to say, boys, make sure you try very hard. So the idea has been that these third-party payments in the past that everybody has assumed have existed but never actually revealed very, very clearly have always been, well, it doesn't really matter because it's always been paid to win. Now, obviously, this time it's a very different issue because this time the allegation is being paid to lose, and therefore it doesn't just become paying a maybe slightly murky, ethically dodgy, legally dodgy paying someone to win a game, which is kind of their duty anyway. It's actually paying someone to do something that's not their duty, which is why this is very, very much stronger.
My word, Sid. Well, I tell you what, there's a huge weekend coming up in Spain, and I guess you're just going to have to tell us about it after it's happened on Monday.
I guess so, yeah. We'll look forward to that. Barcelona, Valencia and Sevilla, Real Madrid. It should be very exciting indeed.
All right, and you're excited about Huntelaar?
I don't know yet. His figures are very, very good indeed in Holland. But the question mark is, can he bring that to Spain? Obviously, La Liga is a far better league than the Dutch league.
Listen, you're going to go and translate for Rafael van der Vaart now?
No, for Mr. Huntelaar.
Oh, it's for Huntelaar. You're in his in his press conference?
Not exactly. I'm doing it from a studio about 20 kilometres away. The simultaneous translation for it.
Oh right, okay.
He's still got that restraining order out in you, has he?
Nice one, Sid. Listen, sorry to hold you up. You get off and do that and give him our warmest, and we'll speak to you on Monday.
Good stuff. Speak to you then. Cheers.
Cheerio then.
Ta-da. Bye bye.
Excellent. We're continuing our exciting continental coverage now. Rafael Honigstein, big game coming up tomorrow night in Germany, eh?
Biggest game of the season. A classic is born was how some of the papers talked about this game, even though they've never played each other.
Yes.
Bayern v. Hoffenheim. Hoffenheim, of course, first. 3 points clear of Bayern with a better goal difference as well. So it's not really a fight for the summit, but I think it's because Hoffenheim and what they've done, and of course Bayern very much representing the old order of German football, it is seen as a sort of almost philosophical or an encounter that transcends the everyday business of awarding 3 points. It's the new boys on the block against the old established aristocrats, and Germany is quite split through the middle, because whereas in the past, when Hoffenheim came in, they were really disliked as these nouveau riche guys. The incredible football that they've played, and people getting to know some of the characters and some of the real stories behind how they've managed to get where they are, have turned a lot of neutrals into fans. And now a lot of people are saying, you know, it'd be quite nice to see them with Bayern's asses. And there's already been some, you know, verbals going back and forth between the two camps. And Ralf Rangnick, the Hoffenheim manager, who incidentally wants to be England manager one day, and has been an intern at Wenger's for a couple of times, has said that we want Bayern scalps. We don't just want their shirts. We want their scalps.
Wow.
And he said, you know, if you want snazzy statements or interesting statements, you go to Munich. If you want to see snazzy football, you come to Hoffenheim.
Interesting. And it's going to be played at the Allianz Arena, yes?
Allianz Arena on Friday night. And as I said, it really is the game of the season.
My word. My word. How's the crunch? How's the credit crunch doing in the Bundesliga?
It's doing okay. The Bundesliga is
actually
doing okay.
With the... Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they've just managed to sell the TV rights for the next 4 years, which came as a huge relief. And also, they've actually managed to marginally increase the income, which is quite a good result.
So the price has actually gone up?
Yeah, not by much. It's only about 10 million euros or so. Mm. Better deal. It's about 420-odd million euros every year, which is only a third of what the Premier League are currently getting. But having said that, because most clubs are not with heavy, don't have to service heavy debt, most clubs are profitable, it's going to affect everyone, as in the sense of that obviously sponsors are going to have less money. People might only buy one shirt rather than two, etc. But there doesn't seem to be a sort of a real sense of crisis.
But tickets are cheap anyway in Germany compared to here, so you wouldn't expect it to affect sort of bums on seats or anything like that.
Although, I mean, most clubs obviously, of course, now really do rely on VIP sponsor corporate boxes as well for a huge... part of the income. That's part of the reason why they can actually subsidize these cheap tickets at places like Bayern, because they have the banks paying for the boxes.
Raph, do you get much booing and such like in the Bundesliga for teams or players or whatever that are suddenly not doing
well? A lot of booing. The crowds are very critical of the manager. Now at Schalke, the sporting director is in the firing line. 50,000 or so were chanting for him to move out. When they lost against City on Thursday a week ago.
Does Fanpower have the ability to actually get rid of people?
It does, because the interesting thing is, of course, that as the clubs are run as clubs, i.e. non-profit, democratically organised entities, the fans and the members actually have real political powers, because they can vote out a president if they don't like him. So, you know, as a president or as somebody who's in charge of the club, it's a lot more difficult to ignore fans' views. And the fans actually have done a lot of things. They've blocked the buses, the team buses when teams, after bad runs, wanted to leave the stadium, whatever. You had fans, and it still happens fairly regularly, you have fans sitting down and protest, blocking the team's departure until they come out and actually talk to them and explain themselves why they've been playing so badly or not playing or not giving their all for the shirt. So, yeah, fan power is quite strong. But it's, part of my incredulity at Barry's, you know, saying, oh, lack of patience, etc., is because in the Bundesliga would have been more or less a clear-cut case, I think, in Keane's position. Somebody who comes in, yes, he's done a great job in the second division, Championship, but obviously not quite cut out in terms of buying and management skills to move them on to a bigger level. He has to go. It's a very, in Germany, you wouldn't say, okay, well, give another 20 years, I'm sure he'll be the new Arsene Wenger. No, you don't do it.
I think it's fair to say that no country gives managers time the way that the Premier League does.
Or used to. I think it's changed now slightly. I think that is definitely true. We just see the numbers of managers who already departed this season. I think you see things getting twitchier and people having a lot less patience. That is true. But I don't think that's necessarily a sign of of something going wrong. I think, you know, part of the reason for me that I always found that some of the mid-table or, you know, like say second row teams in the Premier League perhaps don't really achieve is because there's a bit of a comfort zone. You give managers 5-10 years, well, or 3 or 5, and then you change them.
Very illuminating, Rafa. Thanks very much. We're going to stop part two there, and then the radically different affair that is part three will be along right after this with posts and previews and stuff.
Football Weekly with James Richardson on Guardian.co.uk.
Quick note for some of your posts. McLino says, can we please have a mention of Titus Bramble? This man plays more games and more minutes than Keane, Tevez and Drogba. It's true. It is true, Titus Bramble. It's nice when people live up to expectations as thoroughly as Titus continues to do week in, week out. Starring performance again last weekend for
statistics,
Wigan.
Statistics, damn statistics.
Yeah. Keane, oh dear, this is a bit out of date now, Tuchel, pointing out that he looks like Captain Black of Captain Scarlet fame. Yes.
I'm slightly worried now that he's going to go home and sit in his Cheshire mansion in a room and turn into Howard Hughes and just have a beard down to his ankles and big, long, dirty fingernails while he wonders where it all went wrong.
Well, indeed. Now, moving on to this weekend. Arsenal taking on Wigan Athletic, who, of course, the magnificent kids beat in the Carling Cup. What was it, 3-0?
That's 2-0. Right, 3-0.
3-0, yeah. There you go. And
away win written all over it.
And what's going to happen? Which Arsenal? This is the question. Which Arsenal are going to turn up?
You asked me this last time.
Yeah.
I think the only thing I would say is that I don't expect the scoreline to be as comprehensive as it was when the youngsters play. I think it will be closer this time.
Really? Yeah. Right. Arsenal, of course, coming off a fantastic victory against Chelsea.
Yeah, but so what?
Really?
You beat
one of the top-ranked teams in the country?
That's no indication of a new dawn, is it? I mean, Arsenal specialise in false dawns. So I think anybody that thinks that looks at the table and studies where the points might come and you know how they can claw back the points, and Arsenal play Liverpool coming up quite soon at home, and if they win all those games and then beat Liverpool, well then they'll only be so much near the top and then can really mount a serious challenge. Well, come on, you know, you got to get real and say that this squad is not ready for a major challenge
flaky
at this stage.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, William Gallas, you have lots of, you know, contacts within the... is it just a kind of armed truce there at the moment, or has he been forgiven? He did seem to be playing better this weekend.
Yes, and I mean, I think there are quite a lot of people that felt during his captaincy that one of the things that would have been an advantage is to have that captaincy taken away, just because he really found it difficult to find his rhythm. It was one of those players who looked like he was too distracted by trying to be a captain to actually concentrate enough on doing his primary job, which is being a good player and a good defender. And if he can cut the errors out of his game, that he was prone to one or two kind of ghastly lapses per game, as most of Arsenal's defence are, then I think that taking away the captaincy will prove to be a very good thing for him and might well just be forgotten, and that he will stay beyond January, which at the time of the big eruption seemed almost impossible.
Just very briefly, I don't think the January move was ever really on the cards, for the simple reason that none of the clubs that he mentioned very kindly in his biography, the French clubs that he perhaps would like to go back to, would come close in being able to afford 90 grand a week. So, you know, he wouldn't have talked himself out of a job.
Right.
Wenger couldn't have sold him because no one would have bought him for that money. So it was, I think that part of the story was a bit of a storm in the team cup.
Well, it depended, because if Gallas threw enough of a tantrum to make himself
he wouldn't, because he would lose out financially to whoever was going to go next.
He's an emotional guy, and you say he wouldn't. I mean,
he fought Chelsea so hard for that pay rise that he only got at Arsenal. Why would he chuck it all in because he doesn't like a certain young 26-year-old player?
Did you know that Arsenal have the Premiership's most accurate passer, according to Optostats? Wonder if anyone can name who that is.
Clichy.
It's William Gallas. Apparently he completes 93.
He passes to Clichy.
There you go. A
it's
lot.
Not Manuel Elmina, anyway.
All right, well, I was quite impressed with that stat, and I now realise how wrong I was to have paid any attention at all. Blackburn Rovers taking on Liverpool. We've talked about this. Rovers in all sorts of trouble. Mind you, Liverpool aren't looking too clever, are they? They are top of the league, though. Torres is out for another, was it 4 weeks we're just hearing?
3 weeks, four
so
weeks.
So the Keane misery is going to continue? Or is it suddenly all going to click and fall into place, etc.? Benitez is handling it well?
Keane thing?
Yes.
I don't see what else he can do. I mean, Keane is not playing well.
Mm.
And I don't care how many people come onto our blog to say that he is. He isn't. He's not scoring goals. He's running around like a headless chicken. The longer it goes on, the worse he's getting.
West Ham very narrowly missed out on beating Liverpool at Anfield on Monday. Craig Bellamy hitting the post. Any chance of Blackburn bouncing back from their midweek misery?
Well, Blackburn score goals. That's not the problem. It's whether or not they can keep them out. But Liverpool are struggling a little bit to score. So you never know.
Right. Okay, Bolton aren't struggling to score goals either. They've got seven in their last two. They're hosting Chelsea this weekend. I wonder what's going to happen there. Rafa, what's the mood in Chelsea like? Because is it a bit glum, is it? You're making a glum expression. I presume that's nothing to do with my question.
I think that's just because Rafa's glum.
Are you glum? Oh, dear.
No, I don't think the mood is glum as such. I think that there are a few interesting developments, of course, all to do with the question of how much money is available to Scolari and just how...
How they're going to pay for
how
lunch?
How authentic or how honest his sort of public demeanor of "Oh, it's all fine. I like working with a small squad. I don't need new players anyway." Really
I'll bring
is
sandwiches from home.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there is a possibility that if they should they get one or two bad results, that it will become very political because you could see Miroslav Stock coming on for Drogba, for Deco as a cry for help. You know. That's quite bad if you're forced to do that. And of course, tactically, they were also completely disintegrating by that time. So I think something will have to change a little bit. And if this new era of prudence or, you know, of cutting down will extend to the fact that they're just going to categorically not sign another player, especially with all the question marks about Drogba, and you never know what Nelka's going to turn up, etc. I think it's quite bad. I think something has to be done to give him a bit of a lift.
Elsewhere in the Premier League...
Sorry, could I just stay for the record? I think Bolton will win that game.
Oh, nice one, Barry. Cheers.
Never.
All right. Rafa.
It's got 1-0 Chelsea written all over it, just
right.
The way that they went away after the Man United game and just grounded out results.
I think it depends on Megson's approach at the risk of stating the bleeding obvious. If he goes sends his team out to play like they have been playing in recent games, I see no reason why they shouldn't win.
Elsewhere, Fulham are taking on Man City, and Hughes, we read, is under pressure, etc. Was it 2 wins in 9 now, is it? And Robinho explaining that they've not got the winning mentality and that.
I think we said many times before it's a very difficult place to be when half the team are wondering whether they're still going to be there
right.
Once the next round of superstars are going to be brought in. I think who is, from what we can tell from his Blackburn days, not a manager who necessarily wants to play free-flowing, attacking, stroke Saudi Arabian-type fantasy football.
Right.
Abu Dhabi-type football, is... is forced to, you know, to juggle everything, results, entertainment, growing a team from scratch, and it's his first season at a team with that kind of ambition as well. So I think it's a big change of mentality for him, and
but
I think it's just a little bit too much
by Bundesliga standards. 2 wins in 9. It's time for him to walk. Surely
he he'd be under pressure. He bought himself a little bit of time by qualifying comfortably in UEFA Cup. Though.
Right,
I think it was. Those results came at a good time for him.
And just a word for Roy Hodgson, who's doing all right when all the managers are under pressure. I mean, Fulham don't have huge amounts of money to compete, and they're always one of those that you think, well, they might go down this year, and well, maybe they will, but he does seem to have got a little bit of order and stability at the club, and they look in reasonable shape, so well done to him.
They're up in the top half, aren't they? They're winning
Fulham
all the games
Fulham have only conceded
home.
11 goals in the league this season.
Really?
But they've only scored 12, so...
really?
Their defence, yeah. They've conceded 11. Liverpool have conceded 8... Chelsea 6, Man U 10, and Fulham have conceded 11. Great defence, but they can't score for Toffee, and they need to start scoring.
Portsmouth coming together under Tony Adams, talking about taking shape. Things are beginning to take shape a little bit there, aren't they?
I still think that they're a bit vulnerable. I mean, when you look at what's happened to Roy Keane, and I think everybody is going to watch Tony Adams very closely. When you have young managers like they are with tremendous status and character And they were renowned as players, as being leaders, probably more than anyone else of their generation in British football. And they're both guys who, mentally, shall we say, are very idiosyncratic. And I think that they think that they can sometimes transfer everything quite simply, being a manager. And sometimes when great players are not great managers, it's because it's very difficult to understand that you can't transmit to players what you want them to do, and they're not doing it because sometimes you're not actually in charge of players who are of the calibre of the players that you were playing with.
They're coming off a Thursday night game in Wolfsburg as well, which isn't going to help their chances, in which, prior to which, they're having to stay in a Travelodge or the German equivalent, because Pompey have run out of cash. Apparently their airline went bust that they were trying to fly to Germany on.
This morning.
Yeah.
All very, last morning. Yeah.
Yesterday. Yeah. There you go. Anyway, and also, big London derby, West Ham taking on Spurs. Could go either way, really, couldn't it? Do you think? Yeah, we'll talk about that on Monday, shall we? I thank you, producer Pete. Welcome back. Thanks, Barry.
Welcome.
Particularly heartfelt and sincere performance in today's pod. Raphael, excellent as ever.
Thank you very much.
Amy, lovely to see you again. Hope you'll be joining us again soon. And you, listener, don't be a stranger. We'll be back on Monday. Hope you have a super weekend until then.